From the Tropic of Capricorn in the Namib Desert, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, we could have a record-breaking Tour de France this year for a few reasons that we'll go into, but potentially one of cycling's most infamous records could fall.
We will tell you all you need to know. Plus, we've got another headline-grabbing new bike from Canyon, a headline-grabbing old bike from Specialized, two ultra-endurance records, and we announced the G-Technic competition winner. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that the days of gears might be numbered. But no, we don't mean we're all going to ride single speeds.
No. At Eurobike, one of the world's most important bike shows, Chinese e-bike superbrand Avinox debuted their new motor, which has an internal gearbox which shifts automatically and continuously. It is currently on mountain bikes. But what it could mean for urban bikes is properly exciting, not least a security function that could lock the motor and the pedals.
You are very excited about that.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Right. We also learned this week that Frenchman Victor Bossoni has won the Tour Divide and smashed a new FKT. It's one of the biggest challenges in the Ultra Endurance calendar, racing 4,000 kilometres from Kansas to Mexico, most of it off-road with over 50,000 metres of climbing.
Ouch. His time was just 11 days, 8 hours, 37 minutes. Now, for context, Lachlan Morton set what was considered to be an unbreakable benchmark just a few years ago in a time of 12 days, 12 hours, and 11 minutes.
Amazing, isn't it, really? We also learned that Pinarello have teamed up with luxury brand Louis Vuitton and let their creative director Pharrell Williams design his own bike. Let us know what you think to this.
Oh, good God! It's got a brown saddle!
Yeah.
Dan, why does it have a brown saddle?
Because Pharrell Williams is cool, Si, and a man of taste. That is why.
Do you know how old Pharrell Williams is?
No.
53. That's why that bike has a brown saddle. No. In all seriousness, I'm actually not sure that I am cool enough to pull that bike off. But I do love how flipping amazing it is when someone from outside of the bike industry bubble is let loose. Even if you end up with brown leather, chromed forks, and tri-spoke Princetons.
I love it as well. I've got one on order.
Of course you do. Have you, though, got the matching Louis Vuitton skin suit as well?
I have, but I'm only going to use that on really, really special occasions.
It looks like you're perfect for cyclocross, judging by the colour.
Exactly, yeah. Finally this week, we learned that there are a few records that might get broken over the next month, with the Tour de France starting this Saturday in Barcelona. We cannot wait.
Genuinely, actually, we can't wait.
Very excited.
So the first mountain stage is on Monday. They go over the Tourmalet, one of the most famous climbs in cycling, on Thursday. But it is a stage deep into the final week that cycling historians and fans and, should we say, nerds like us are most eagerly awaiting.
Why, you might be asking? Well, because stage 19 finishes on the most famous climb in all of pro cycling, Alpe d'Huez. There is always hype around that mountain, but there's even more anticipation this year because it's not been used at the race since 2022, which is a four-year gap.
4 years! And that doesn't sound that long ago, but 4 years ago, GCN Plus was still a thing.
It was, yes.
Yeah, Paul Sexass wasn't even old enough to do junior races, and I was in my 30s.
How times change.
Absolutely. They were good times in 2022.
Now, the other reason that there's extra anticipation this year is because many people are expecting Marco Pantani's record to at least come under threat.
Yeah, something that for many years was unthinkable, basically. Pantani set that benchmark in 1995, riding the 13.8 kilometres in just 36 minutes and 40 seconds. That's an estimated, 7 watts per kilo,
roughly, yeah,
at the end of a five-hour stage that scaled three all-category climbs, so the biggest climbs there are.
Yeah. Pantani, incidentally, doesn't just hold the fastest time at Alpe d'Huez, he holds the top three fastest ever times on that climb. That is according to climbing-records.com. The closest anyone else has come to Pantani's record is Lance Armstrong. It was over a minute slower when he rode it as an individual time trial, therefore fresh, back in 2004.
So, you know, I had a go at Alpe d'Huez that summer.
I remember this.
2004. And I remember being slightly put out and finding out that my time at the climb was just about good enough not to be last in the Tour de France. It was a bit of a wake-up call to a 21-year-old Simon. But anyway, essentially, I didn't pace it very well.
Oh, is that, that why was the wake-up went too call. Hard at the foot?
Did I you? Did, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the last time it was used in 2022, all those years ago, as we said, the fastest time was set by Pogacar, Vingegaard and Thomas. Although, it was pretty cagey at points, wasn't it? But their time was 39 minutes and 8 seconds. So 2.5 minutes slower than Pantani almost.
Like an eternity. So you might wonder what makes people think the record might be under threat this year. Well, mainly because both Pogacar and Vingegaard have made significant improvements since 2022, and so too has their equipment.
Yeah, we've actually got a video coming out this weekend for you where we rode Tour de France bikes through the ages. Seven bikes from seven decades. Yep. And we can tell you firsthand that what they were riding in 1995 was significantly slower than the equipment that they are using today.
Significantly slower and yet ridden faster than today.
Yes.
The other reason people think it might be broken, Pantani's record this year, is because although it comes on stage 19, so after almost 3 weeks of racing, the stage itself is not that hard.
Not that hard, no. They have a first category climb near the start, although it's only 7 kilometres long, and then a 5.5K climb ahead of the Alp itself. So, I mean, it's not soft, but it's not hard either, is it?
Semi.
What?
Nothing.
Okay. I still don't think it'll be broken, though.
No. Why not?
Well, because last year, despite one of his best performances ever, Pogacar didn't beat Bjarne Riis's record on Autocam in the Pyrenees, if you remember. So he rode away from Vingegaard near the bottom.
I remember it
he
well.
He time-trialled his way up, the rest of it, as fast as he could. He put over 2 minutes into Jonas, and yet he still fell short of Riis's record by 30 seconds.
About 30 seconds, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. Now, in some ways, that's a good sign, I think we could say, because as many of you watching this will know, the mid-90s was the start of the peak blood doping years, where speed suddenly increased rather dramatically.
They did indeed, yeah. But despite all the other advances in training, fueling equipment, and everything else, some of those records still aren't being broken, even by Pogacar.
But some are. I mean, I think that's why people think the Outdoers record might be broken this year. Because, for example, Plateau de Bay in 2024, a couple of years ago, widely regarded as one of Pogacar's most impressive climbing performances or on the bike full stop. He beat Pantani's time that day by a staggering 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, but Vingegaard and Evenepoel also both beat Pantani's time that day as well. So it's kind of important to point out here that comparing times of two rides done in completely different conditions and circumstances can be misleading, can't they? They can lead people to incorrect conclusions. Mm.
Interesting, though. I can't wait for stage 19.
Absolutely,
a lot of good
racing
to come beforehand. And it's not all about Alpe d'Huez, of course. There are other records that could be broken this year. Firstly, the average speed of the Tour de France as an entire race.
Yeah, that was a record that was set just last year by Pogacar. 42.9 kilometres per hour. I mean, as we found out in the video that released on Sunday, Dan, that's quite hard to do on the flat by yourself.
Yeah, even for just under 3Ks, let alone 3,500.
Exactly. But the question is, could they go faster this year? I think absolutely is the answer, isn't it? Stages are increasingly aggressive from the start. More and more strong teams and riders are looking to get up the road because they know that they can't compete for that final podium.
Definitely. I think that's a massive thing, isn't it? That so many really strong riders are not looking at the early break and thinking, that's just a TV breakaway, I don't want to be in that. They're actually thinking, I've got a decent chance here, if I'm with the right riders, of staying clear to the finish and trying for a stage win. Anyway, averaging over 43 kilometres per hour for 3,300 kilometres with 55,000 metres of climbing would still definitely be bonkers, wouldn't it? But it definitely could happen. What can't happen this year is someone beating the record of the youngest ever stage winner, not even Paul Success. He's going to be 19 years and 288 days old when he starts the race this coming Saturday.
However, if he does win a stage, he will be the second youngest ever to do so, behind, trivia quiz for you, the Italian Fabio Battistini.
Never have got that.
No. He was 19 years and 133 days old when he won a stage of the 1931 Tour de France. So that's 95 years ago.
Are you sure it's 95 years ago, Si? Because on the Tour de France preview show, you said it was 51 years since the Frenchman last won the Tour de France, when in fact it's 41.
It was just a mere slip-up, because you see, I should know exactly how long ago it was, because it was just 2 years after I was born. Yeah. And I do know my own age.
well done.
Yes. Yeah. So essentially, the slip-up was yours for not correcting
My slipper. I was embarrassed basically. As much as you were, I think, so I really...
Good. Well, you should be, frankly.
Back to success, though. He does have the opportunity to become the youngest ever overall winner of the race, although he only has this year in order to achieve that.
Pressure.
Because when he won the second edition of the race in 1904... Henri Cornet was 19 years and 355 days old.
Crikey, that's bonkers, isn't it? Now, another record that could be broken, but won't, is the record number of stage wins. So that, of course, is currently held by Mark Cavendish with 35.
I mean, this is sort of conceivable, but inconceivable, because Pogacar currently has 21 Tour de France stages to his name, so he'd have to win 14 to equal it, 15 to break it.
Even Pogacar would struggle, wouldn't
he?
So not impossible, but improbable. Mm.
What is conceivable, in my opinion at least, is that he could win five stages, given the parkour and the fact that he's absolutely unbelievable. And if he does that, it's going to take him up to 26 Tour de France stage wins.
Yeah, by comparison, Mark Cavendish was 30 when he took his 26th stage at the Tour, whilst Eddy Merckx was 27. So that's the same age that Pogacar is now.
Mm. I think probably a few days younger, though, so... to do, Pogacar, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And just finally, another record that could be broken is that of biggest salary. So Dan Benson reported last week that Pinarello Q36.5 have offered Paul Sexas €13 million a year to join their team, which is a sum significantly higher than any other salary ever seen in the sport, even Tadej Pogacar's.
That's mind-blowing, isn't it? Yeah, his current contract with Decathlon runs through to the end of next year. But there have been plenty of contract buyouts in recent years. Q36.5 have a history there, don't they? Bought Tom Pidcock out of his Ineos contract a couple of years ago. And, money talks, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? And you might be wondering where that money's coming from, given that the team is sponsored by an Italian bike brand. And the answer to that is that Pinarello and the team itself are owned by the South African billionaire Ivan Glasenberg.
Yeah, clearly he has deep pockets. As a billionaire, you know, you'd assume so, wouldn't you? And I guess he's got the desire to have the best team in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it is a good thing for the sport or, in fact, for success is another matter. But wherever he ends up in the future, it looks like around €1 million will be landing in his bank account every month.
With a large thud.
He'll have to take some out for tax, though, won't he?
Afterwards, yeah, but it'll still get there in the first.
That's what I mean. But you know, I just want to remind Paul that like he needs to be prudent and he can't spend it all every month.
No, yeah,
he's going to have to hold some back for tax.
He needs to think about the tax.
He should. Yeah, I mean, hopefully he's got someone to advise him on matters such as that. I don't feel qualified.
No, I could give him a few tips.
Could you?
Yeah. Do you know what? If I had a sum of €1 million landing in my bank account each month, I would genuinely get some sort of thud sound notification for my phone that sounds on the exact time and day that the salary lands in my bank account each month.
I mean, that would be quite cool, wouldn't it? But then if you're a multimillionaire, you can have like a tinkling change sound, just as like as an irony, couldn't you? I feel like we might be getting slightly off topic.
Thud sounds. Yeah. Actually, no, we're not going off topic, Si. The talk about thud sounds for banking accounts is a segue to the GCN shot.
Well, I think you're getting ahead of yourself, mate. There's one more record, soberingly, that might get broken this summer. Right. It could be the hottest Tour de France ever, couldn't it?
Oh, yes, it could be.
Europe is baking at the moment, and that will be a massive challenge for the riders, isn't it? You'd think that would slow them down a little bit.
Yeah, there's already been a heat wave in France, and it sounds like there might be another one during the race. So, yeah. I mean, a few of the national championships were shortened last week, weren't they, because of the temperatures.
Indeed. And as we mentioned last week, it finished Leo Wilcox's record attempt off, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. It did indeed. So it could affect things.
A sad one, that one. But also, we should ask the viewers what they think.
Yep.
Particularly about the infamous Pantani record. Do you think it's going to get broken this year? And if so, is that a good thing?
I'm really interested to hear people's thoughts.
I am as well, yeah, absolutely.
Right, can I get back to selling merch now so I can get a thud notification out of my bank account?
Yeah, moving on, Dan, I think we can say now.
Genuinely, these T-shirt designs sold like hotcakes last week after our shout-out on the show, didn't they? We were genuinely over the moon when we heard the figures.
Oh, we were.
On Monday morning.
Absolutely. John Cannings, our old mate, who you remember, thought there'd actually been a glitch in our accounting system. No. But no, so many of you bought one of our T-shirts or prints. And we are incredibly grateful for that, aren't we?
Thank you very much. Here is one of the Grand Tour Collection prints. We've got this for sale over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. The T-shirt, including the ones that Si and I are wearing today. The Grand Tour prints, one of which we have here, as was mentioned. The GCN Camelback Special Edition water bottle and matching T-shirt and much, much more. for.
Yeah, you'll be pleased to hear that we'll be keeping our T-shirts on this week. Thank the Lord. And there's another T-shirt design as well that I've spotted. We haven't got hands on it yet.
Oh, is that? I've not
the
spotted that.
The LA one.
Oh, yes.
Which is... oh, it was my favourite last year, actually. Regularly sport it.
Yeah, nice. Right, hopefully there should also be a QR code on screen now. Just scan that. It'll take you straight through to the shop.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with another super cool new canyon.
They've been quite busy in the late canyon over in Germany, haven't we? And now last week we told you about a whole load of conceptual products that they teased at Eurobike. This week, it's an update to the venerable Air Road.
Yes. Now, the frame is essentially unchanged, except for adding compatibility on the top model, CFR model, for SRAM's universal derailleur hanger, which means, essentially, you can fit their Explore rear derailleurs, the gravel derailleurs, to it. Or a mountain bike rear derailleur, actually, if you want, from SRAM. But what I think is really interesting is the new race bar cockpit, which means that the bike is faster. So can you say the bike tests even faster in the wind tunnel?
In fact, it's now broken 200 watts in the benchmark Tour magazine tests, 198 watts to be precise, whilst the old Air Road was 203.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be said, it is a stunning looking bike, isn't it? Like, for me, actually, I mean, if Canyon said, here it is, Si, that's your bike, I would have to say, no, I'm really sorry, because that new race bar cockpit, it's just a little bit too low for my back.
It?
Yeah, Vanderpool can get away with it. I can't these days, unfortunately, but it is very cool.
Yeah. Could I just say, well done to Tour magazine. For so many years, they've really had this benchmark that everyone wants to top or be on the charts for, haven't they?
Yeah, fair play to them, actually. You're right. That is pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, Dan, what do you think of this bike?
I actually like the look of that bike, Si.
Do you?
I'm not sure if you're expecting me to say that, but I say job well done.
Well, I mean, you, as a rider, you were not one to turn down any potential tech that might help you go faster. So I'm not surprised. This is actually aero guru Dan Bigham's new road bike, which is a heavily customised, specialised Shiv time trial bike. Now, we asked our own aero guru, Mr. Bridgewood, just how fast he thinks this bike is. And, I mean, to be fair, it was quite a difficult question for him to answer. But he said it's probably similar to that new Air Road we talked about, perhaps marginally quicker. But he thinks that the main reason that Bigham's done it is, firstly, that the Specialized Tarmac isn't as aero as the TT bike. And secondly, because that aggressive time trial bike geometry means that he could, in theory, get a faster position on it because he'd be further forward over the bottom bracket.
Interesting. And actually, it'll be interesting to see if the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe team that Dan works for end up racing it on any road stages soon.
Well, yeah, it would be interesting. It'd be interesting to know whether Specialized are okay with that or whether it would encourage Specialized to bring back their old aero bike, well, a new version of their old aero bike, because the tarmac's significantly faster than the old one, but the Venge, basically, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Right, moving on now to matters of ultra endurance. We had a message last week, didn't we, to tell us about the Polish rider Jacek Kwiatkowski, who is trying to become the person who has ridden the furthest distance ever in 1 month.
The current record is 11,618 kilometres, which is 7,200 miles, and was achieved by Arvid Lewin in Manitoba, Canada, between the 1st of July and the 30th of July back in 2020, when Si was in his 30s.
Oh, yeah. Good times. Well, actually, no, 2020 was a fairly mixed bag, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little
bit. It was, yeah.
Started off all right.
But I was younger, that's true. Anyway, as we film this, with 28 days ridden, he does look like he is agonisingly behind schedule, but with 2 days to go, can he bring it back? They'd be pretty big days, but it is possible. As we said earlier about Pogacar, improbable... Not impossible.
Well, I guess we will find out next week. There's nothing I would hate more than to be slightly behind schedule in an ultra-endurance record attempt.
Yeah.
That sounds horrific.
Yeah.
The attempt sounds horrific. To be chasing your tail or somebody else's, even worse.
Well, yeah, because you imagine, like, obviously, that you would know for days that that was what was going to happen. And an ultra-endurance sprint finish would literally be, like, 48 hours, wouldn't it? Yeah, painful.
Anyway, let's move on. So after a video released on Sunday where we wanted to expose just how much of racing we watch is influenced by the motorbikes that bring us the TV pictures and get us the photos, etc., I got a message from Safe Cycling to say that they created a distance tracker that tells the motopilot exactly how far ahead of the peloton or rider or breakaway they currently are.
Yeah, This is seems like a genius bit of tech,
great,
right?
Yeah.
So far it's only been used in one race, which is the Baloise Belgium Tour. But, well, as we said, it looks fantastic. Why is this not already being rolled out to every race? I don't understand.
No.
I mean, the only issue from those photos that they sent is you realise just how small the riders look 50 metres away.
Well, I think with gimbals and zooms, we should be all right, shouldn't we? I don't know enough about technology. I should do working in a world which is about bikes where we use cameras, but I'll leave that to other people.
Well, we always like to get close up, don't we, on you, Dan? So that's why you never had to learn about it. But I think the issue when you've got a zoom lens is that any bump is magnified.
That's why it's always about gimbals. But yeah, you're right. It does look very bumpy sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
And actually, you see it in the smaller races, which gives you that extra respect for the people that bring us the pictures of the bigger ones because it's so smooth in comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, as we said on that video on Sunday, it is a catch-22 situation because we want, and really need to be honest, great TV images for the sport. But to get that does mean influencing the results slightly.
Yeah. Well, and it's the inconsistency, isn't it? Mm. That's the issue. There were some people in the comments under that video like, what does it matter? And it's like, if it affected everyone the same amount, arguably it doesn't matter. But it's the fact that you can see it influencing one part of the race, not another, that you're like, oh.
Well, I mean, I think we said in the video, but I felt like I didn't explain myself properly there. But particularly in time trials, the camera motorbike is generally to the side or behind. It doesn't really influence the rider. But there are generally police motorbikes, especially at the Tour de France, to park the crowd in front of the riders. And a couple of metres difference would make a difference to the power you need to put out. If you take that Tour de Swiss time trial recently where Pogacar beat Van der Poel by 0.03 of a second, absolutely that was down to positioning of a motorbike at some point.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't know which way, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Would have an influence.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It's annoying to think that would influence it, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Particularly as a massive Matthew Van Der Poel fanboy. I've never thought about that one, Dan. Now I'm annoyed. Right, sticking with pro racing for a moment, it was the National Championship weekend last weekend, which is where most pros return to their home country to contest their home championships. Now, the issue for many, though, is that it comes just 6 days ahead of the Tour de France. And so a lot of the big names actually look to skip their nationals, don't they?
And to illustrate exactly why, poor Eduardo Affini crashed out of the Italian National Time Trial Championships last week. So his tour start is very much looking in doubt, I've got to say, which would leave Jonas Vingegaard potentially in search of a new teammate. That would be rumoured to be Bart Lemon, if he's needed, apparently. Meanwhile, in Belgium, it is mandatory for any pro to take the start line or face a week-long ban from racing. Start of the national champs, I should reiterate.
Yeah, and then you'd miss the start of the Tour de France, wouldn't you, basically? Unless you have a note from your mum or your team doctor, I think, to say that you can't race, which I find quite funny, really. Like, the most notable sick note this year was from Remco Evenepoel, wasn't it? But there were a fair few, right?
There probably were, yeah. I mean, we can only hope he's fit and well for the Tour de France on Saturday.
Exactly,
talk about bad timing.
All that training
and lack of racing, and he gets sick one week before the Tour.
What do you think was on his sick note? Do you think it was his tummy bug or a sore knee?
Acne. I don't know.
Has he got acne?
No, he hasn't.
Poor
I don't know. I'm just making something up. Anyway, the only other big news from the Nationals was actually from the previous weekend's American National Championships, where reigning mountain bike marathon world champion and former cross-country world champion Kate Courtney took the win in what was quite a rare outing for her on a road bike.
Yeah, will she do more now, though? This is her second win of the year on the road. And from what she said in her post-race interview, it sounds like she's kind of relishing a new challenge away from mountain biking, where she's got such a long history. And it reminds me, Dan, a lot like me 20 years ago, although significantly faster and much, much, much more successful.
Yeah, amongst other things. More everything, basically.
Basically, yeah.
So, yeah. You'd better watch out when she retires, because I think she'd make a better presenter for you as well, Sam.
I'm
being completely honest.
Without doubt. My only hope is that she, like many people, have been far too successful to join us here at GCN, basically.
We're lucky to be in a time of increased wages in the sport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very good point, actually. There'll be no one queuing up to follow following our shoes. Right, now, before we leave cycling shorts, we have a competition winner to announce.
Yeah, this is to win a G-Technic Ultimate Bike Care Kit, which Ollie successfully used to make Size Pinarello look like new again. Something we can't get enough of, to be honest, are those products. And the lucky person whose bike will shortly be looking spotless is Paul Doyle.
Congratulations, Paul.
Nice one. We haven't already been in touch with you. We will be soon, and we'll get that out to you. It is time now for hack/bodge of the week. You can get involved in this part of the show. Just go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. I got a cracking one to start with this week, so I have
one.
It comes in from Mark Heaton, who put dog in a repair stand. Doesn't sound like a great start, but here it is.
Is Mark a vet?
You don't need to worry. Mark said, in order to cut our dog's claws, I put a pair of handlebars in the repair stand and then hung the grooming hammock from the handlebars. Stable and secure, with cheese to bribe him and my daughter's help, we got the job done.
I mean, that is quite an amusing looking photo, isn't it? Do you know what? When I first saw this, I was like, is that okay to suspend your dog from a bike stand? But now I know that it's actually a grooming hammock, and so he hasn't bodged the bit that's holding up the dog.
No, it look the dog and the hammock both look comfy, don't they?
They do, yeah, that's cool.
If you're listening on podcast format, don't worry.
Yes.
All is okay.
And if you are listening on podcast format, you are basically missing out on seeing a very cute-looking dog suspended from a bike stand. It's basically what it says on the tin, isn't it?
With freshly cut claws.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a hack, isn't it?
Well, you can't go bodge with that. Just
no, you can't.
Purely from the photo of a dog alone.
Yeah, fair. Okay. And yeah, cheese definitely works as a bribe, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Works on me as well, actually. Right, Jim.
Do you not like your fingernails being cut?
I mean, any excuse to get cheese down, basically. Right, Jim from Grantham sent this one in. Sushi recycling. He says, I'm sure I can't be the only person who's thought of this, but the little soy sauce bottle with sushi boxes is great for carrying some emergency chain lube for long, hot rides, multi-day adventures, or when you start a ride and forgotten to lube your chain. And you're right, you are not the only person who has ever come up with that one, but it seems like such a good hack that we should probably put it in again.
Yeah? Oh, sorry, we had that before.
We have had it before, yeah, a few times over the years, but I mean, it
must be quite hard to get the lubrication into the bottle because they're not the biggest of nozzles, are they?
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
No. Well, it's clearly managed it. There's very little space left in them, tiny little bubbles, look.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's a fish shape as well.
Yeah. That's you could put sun cream in as well, couldn't you? But then you'd have to mark it out. You want to get that the wrong way around.
Well, you'd probably need quite a few soy sauce bottles to be able to actually sun cream anything. I mean, even like that's not going to even cover one ankle.
I might just want to top up for my nose, but then I just felt the size of my nose and thought, yeah, you're right.
Exactly, yeah. You'd need a couple of soy sauce bottles, yeah.
For nose. Right. Moving on. No Noptimize. So it's been a while to get that, as you could see. Fixed position light mount. Like Si, I attach my light to the underside of my computer mount. However, for aesthetic purposes, I had opted for a shiny alloy mount, which consequently meant I wasn't able to get enough purchase to keep my light from dipping downward whenever I encountered rough terrain. Using some CAD software and a 3D printer, hack, I designed an adapter that holds the light in a fixed position, casting a beam of light right where I want it. I was also able to choose beige filament to avoid the dreaded black on this classic styled build.
There you go. I mean, to be fair, that is quite cool. Like, I know, obviously, I've been rude about brown saddles and handlebar tape. Actually, I wasn't explicitly rude about the brown handlebar tape, but, you know, it was in that Pinarello from earlier. But on a classic build like this, that's pretty cool, and I think the polished look is mega. So yeah, fair play to you. I think that's super cool. I like that.
Is it a hack?
Yeah, that's totally a hack, isn't it?
You know, the look of even the way the picture has been uploaded and sent inside, the pictures themselves, the type of lights, the type of bike, the way that was written, I think that Noptimize is a very organised person.
Yeah. What I'm interested to know though, Noptimize, is what head unit you're running to avoid the dreaded black on your classic build. Because that's quite hard to get a retro-looking head unit. Mm. Maybe that's a... I think I need some of those soy sauce bottles on my stool today. Maybe that's a new... what am I wanting to say?
I don't know.
A new thing, an opportunity for a head unit manufacturer to get like a retro-styled one.
Could be. I mean, it might be niche. Niche, as they say over in the US. But yeah, give it a go.
They don't say niche, do they?
I'm pretty sure they do, don't they?
Do they?
We don't have to go off topic, so.
We do.
I mean, no wonder hardly anyone gets through to the nugget.
Good point. Well, if any of you are still here, can you let us know whether it is niche in the US? Because that's taken me by surprise. I'm not going to lie.
I haven't got it wrong. If it is wrong, I've got no idea where that came from. Right, last one this week is a video site that you actually haven't seen yet.
No, okay.
You're going to have to open... Actually, you might not be able to open it up. I'll describe... Will you describe it and I'll get it up on my computer.
Okay.
Oh, no, you have got it. Okay, I can describe it. I mean, this is all going to whatever. Finding a place to store a hitch rack can be awkward, says Jeff Scott. My solution was to buy a spare hitch for about $30 and with some wooden screws, made a mounting bracket for the whole thing. Keeps it secure and off the floor. It also keeps the keys with it. I also keep the keys with it, so there's no searching for them either.
I'm slightly underwhelmed by the video. Yeah. I thought it was going to be really like something dramatic, but no, I'm looking at a bike
Jeff.
Rack. I'm sorry, Jeff. It's not that it's not a great solution to your problem, but I am just looking at a bike rack that instead of being mounted to your car is mounted to a wall.
Yeah, instead of being on the floor, sorry, taking up precious room.
Is it not taking up precious room if it's sticking out the side of the wall?
Well, you don't need to walk on the wall.
Good point, but you might have to walk past it. I don't know, like, I think it's cool and I like that it's not on the floor, but I just feel like
it's a bit niche.
I remain slightly underwhelmed.
Okay.
But it's not a bodge, it is a hack. I'm just a bit like, yeah. Great.
Well, I can see where you're going.
Yeah, that, I mean, I'm just glad we ended it on a high.
We don't have... It's either hack or bodge. There's no underwhelming option, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it's a hack, but right. Caveated.
OK. Well, anyway. Jeff, thanks for sending it in. We look forward to seeing your hacks and bodges ready for next week's show.
OK, it's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a very coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo that we'll give you in just 1 second after the results from last week.
Last week's photo is this one of Victor Hannes on the podium of the Baloise Belgian Tour. Our winner this week is Rich M3477, who put caption competition. Victor Hannes became the first rider in history to be disqualified while on the victory podium because the handles on his beer stein were less than 40 centimetres wide.
That is very good. I like that a lot.
Well thought. So, yeah. Got a lot of likes, that did.
It
did. Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, when I'm rich, get in touch with us on Facebook and we will get your Camelback water bottle out to you. Right, Dan, what we got this week, mate?
This week, I couldn't find any decent photos, at least none that I could think of a caption for from the national championships. So I've gone back to the Tour de Suisse. This is Lenny Martinez of Bahrain victorious going through the feed zone. There's a lot going on in this photo.
There is a lot going on there. What on earth?
I've got two to get us started this week. First up, blooming heck, it's hard juggling a full-time job when pro cycling. And the second one is, excuse me, is this ride banded? It's because it's an elastic band.
You know, what's the thing about juggling a full-time job? Is it because it looks like he's juggling?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Well, for those of you listening, he's got a bottle in one hand, he's got tights filled with ice in another, he's got a gel falling down below him, and there's an elastic band over his left-hand shoulder as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on. I assume the elastic band was holding the gel to the bottle, but where the ice tights have come in. I've got no idea.
No.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, that looks like a good one. Get your teeth stuck into that one and we'll pick a winner next week.
Shortly, we'll let you know what's coming up on GCN this week, but first up, some comments from last week's video, starting with the comments underneath last week's show where we were talking about potential speed limits for bike lanes over in the Netherlands. Jeremy Hatt wrote in, say, major e-scooter manufacturers like Segway in Canada are now openly advertising 80 km/h top speed. No jailbreaks or hacks needed. We have totally lost the plot.
Yeah, I sort of think that is entirely true, Jeremy, that someone somewhere has lost the plot thinking that that's okay. I can't remember if I said it last week on camera or off, but the fact that you can sell this stuff because some people might not use it on the roads, it feels like a fairly weak thing.
On my way to watch Metallica in Cardiff at the weekend, Si, I was down a back road just north of Newport.
For anyone under the age of 30, by the way, they were
people in the office like, nope, never heard of them. What? There was a lad coming down a country road on one of these e-bikes, not pedalling, no helmet, must have been doing about 40 miles/h.
Whoa.
Oh, it was ridiculous the way, round a corner. Yeah, crazy.
Sketchy, isn't it? Detroit Johnny said, I think nuance is exactly the right term here. As an American who's ridden both Dutch bikes and e-bikes in the Netherlands, I think on bike paths there should be different speeds for different conditions. A path that's wide and generally empty should allow for higher speeds than a path in a congested town. That sounds fair, doesn't it? Furthermore, I observed that people riding drop bar bikes generally ride on the road, whereas the bike paths were primarily occupied by people riding commuter-type bikes. High-power throttle e-bikes were a menace there, as they are everywhere. However, I was way more comfortable riding in the Netherlands than riding at home in the States. Mm. That's super useful insight, actually, isn't it?
Yeah,
particularly
really
getting that contrast between an American and someone who's actually from the Netherlands.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think it's very difficult to comment, even though we do it, Si, on cycling in different cultures and different areas, isn't it?
Yeah, the only thing about variable speed limits is, like, even in a car, where that's what you have all the time, people still mess it up, don't they? And on a bike, particularly plenty that don't have speedometers, you know. I don't know, maybe you're asking too much people, maybe I'm not asking enough, I don't know. Danny Staten said, I think GCN editors should just capture the one time we've said Jonas Vingegaard's name the right way and then just cut it in.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea to me as well.
Vingegaard.
It saves the stress, really, doesn't it, on our part?
Yeah.
The stress leading up to his surname.
To be fair, we were watching a GCN video that had been dubbed into, was it Mandarin or Cantonese the other day?
Oh, yeah.
And we sounded pretty blooming good.
We did. We were fluent.
Yeah, I mean, really fluent. So maybe that's the answer. We just have to dub ourselves into Danish for that one.
Right, Lorenzo Big Guy. The last thing anybody wants to see is Ollie detailing Si's dirty canyon. Phrase that you must have come out with last week.
This was when I was saying how much I appreciated that Ollie had detailed my Pinarello, but it's not as old and it hasn't been through the mill quite as much as my canyon, which is dirtier. Anyway, and then there were one or two people who, it turns out, not only do they watch the end of the GCN show, but they actually are paying attention at the end.
Yeah, right at the end.
Right at the very end. So thank you very much to you lot.
This was from Jesus Pascual Camino, but lol, can't believe you actually did it. That caught me totally off guard. Good one, lads. To which Distracted Magpie put, at least 8 of us stayed to the very end, it seems. Somebody else put 9.
There you go. Right, moving swiftly on. To the video we released on Saturday, which is Why Aren't Dangerous Drivers Punished More? Loads and loads and loads of comments on that one, so thank you so much for taking the time to do that. Olu Pina said, I've been driving for a living for 27 years, 17 as a truck driver and 10 as a bus driver. I can tell you that people do not take driving seriously enough, or even seriously at all. People are constantly willing to take risks to benefit themselves regardless of how it affects others. I do believe that 90% of drivers are far worse at operating a vehicle than what they think. Mm. It's quite a sobering thought, isn't it?
Yeah, there were a lot of sobering comments. You said like over 1,000 comments, I think, when I looked earlier on today. Club Stupid, driving while using your phone should be treated as mens rea. Everyone knows it's dangerous and people do it anyway. That's not simply making a mistake.
That's really tricky, isn't it, that? Because you're right. So mens rea was one of the legal terms that I learned in that video that basically is about the guilty mind. So in order to get a criminal conviction, you not only have to do the act, but you also have to have been proven to have intended to do it almost. And so the hard thing with getting driving convictions is that most of the time people are doing something that millions of people do every day, but they just don't have a negative outcome to that action because of luck, basically, so particularly like using phones. And yeah, but it's hard to know, isn't it? Because you say, well, it is just a mistake. It's a one in a million outcome. What's the point of putting someone behind bars for that? Like, would it actually deter them from doing it? I don't know whether it would or not.
I think if enough people that are currently using mobile phones at the wheel saw people going to prison for a significant period of time, it might have some sort of effect. Yeah,
I mean, it did with drink driving, didn't it?
Yeah.
In the UK anyway. I know it's a massive problem still, particularly all over the world. But yeah, maybe having a campaign about it. It's a tricky one though, isn't it?
It is trickier. Bonneville County, Idaho. My wife was pedalling her Fat Tad e-trike on Memorial Drive and was rear-ended by an uninsured and unlicensed driver doing 40 miles per hour. Frame bent, broke 6 ribs. And the driver was handed back his keys and released with a $400 fine.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of that going on. There was lots of similar comments to that as well.
Yeah, interesting that that commenter makes the link to a gun. And he said that if he'd fired his rifle into his car and destroyed his car, then he'd be in handcuffs and in jail for months until my trial, then in prison for decades. Mm. So as opposed to getting your gun handed back to you and a $400 fine. I don't know. It's a tricky one, very tricky one. Watch the video if you haven't seen it already and
yeah, make sure
welcome
you do.
Your thoughts. Yes.
Philippe Bay Renault CSP. This kind of video sets GCN apart in cycling YouTube. Intelligent, deep research and presentation of a cycling-related theme, so different from the usual videos that populate this media. Congrats and keep it up.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Meanwhile, Sunday's video was most doping at the Tour de France is not what you think. This was me and Si riding at distances behind a motorbike to see how much difference it made to our power at the same speed. Nick Gilroy, this is great research. I've now started ordering fast food from Just Eat to random houses along my route just so I can draft the delivery guys. Thank you, GCN.
That's good. Keith Nugent said, in Challenge Mallorca, Remco Evenepoel was pulled away by a motorbike at very close range. Race over. There was a lot of talk about it, but nothing done, it seems. But don't take your jersey off at the end of it. Take your jersey off at the end of a very long time trial and you will get fined. Good point.
Chris rides bicycles. I think the biggest problem is that as soon as a big name attacks, a motorbike gets in front to get the heroic attack shot from the front, but the motorbike with the riders behind films the desperate chase shot over the shoulders of those riders. There has to be a rule that a motorbike can only go in front when the gap is bigger than so much. Also, every motorbike should have something like a Garmin Varia to tell the camera crew that they're too close. Well, yeah, we featured that from Safe Cycling earlier. I'm sure that will be something that is implemented by most races soon.
Yeah, I think so. Right then, we are getting on for the end of the GCN show now. Quickly let you know what's coming up on the channel, though. So on Wednesday, what we got, Dan?
It is a beginner's guide to the Tour of France. For a lot of you, it might not be relevant if you've been watching this sport for quite some time. You might still learn something, but if you've got anybody that you want to help get into the sport to appreciate it for how good it is, make sure you share that video with them because I think they're going to learn a fair bit in a short period of time.
That's right. On Thursday, we have Naomi, who you'll know from previous videos. She is attempting to ride 100 miles in a couple of weeks. I think we talked about that, didn't we?
We did. Yep.
She's off to Finland to take part in the Saimaa Gravel Tour. That video is coming for you on Thursday. And then super excited about Saturday, where Connor and Ollie went to Korea to go bikepacking, and it sounded amazing.
Yeah. Ollie's got a lot of stories from that trip, none of which Connor agrees with, so I think the video will be worth watching. And then on Sunday, we spoke about it earlier on in the show, 70 years of Tour de France tech tested. Yes, I and I were lucky enough to ride 7 bikes from 7 decades that have been ridden to, well, most of them ridden to a very high level, like Grand Tours.
That's it. Right, Dan, that's the end of the GCN show,
isn't it? It is, and we haven't got a nugget. I feel like we're going to be disappointing so many people. We did think about it.
It's tough, isn't it? Because
trying to think of a nugget every week, not as easy as we make it look.
That's it, yeah. Well, I mean, last week you resorted to making us take our tops off, didn't you?
So I'll do that again.
That was unfortunate. No. Why don't we just say very calmly, what are you up to this week, Dan? Because it's quite exciting.
Oh, yes, I'm heading out to Barcelona for the start of the Tour de France. So I'll be getting as much tech as I possibly can. So, yeah, if you're still watching at this point and there's anything in particular you'd like me to see and go and look at from any of the teams in terms of tech, just let me know.
You're also going to be investigating an energy gel that includes eating lactate.
Yep.
Apparently, all of the supplies have been bought by one team. Did you know that?
Have they? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently. I was reading an article. So, yeah.
Ah.
One team has managed to get hold of this lactate energy gel.
Right.
Lactate being supposedly an amazing fuel source for your body.
I'll see if I can sneak you some back for the Gravel World Champs.
Thank you very much, mate. I appreciate that.
No worries.
Do you know what? I'd have to get my head in gear for that because the thought of eating lactate...
No wonder my legs are hurting.
Imagine that. No, apparently they've done a lot of work make it not only palatable but also... Absorbable?
Sounds about right. I know what you mean.
Yeah. I think that was almost a nugget there.
Yeah, almost. Thanks for watching. See you next week.